Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop,
we are bringing you a full report from VultureFest. That is the pop culture mecca that took place this weekend in New York City.
Plus, we're discussing highlights from the Billboard Awards and sharing our reactions to Deadpool 2.
All of that, and of course, the big sell. It's all happening right now on Inside Pop. Hello, everyone. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel. And this is Inside Pop, your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, if you are a fan of this podcast but have not yet taken the time to rate us on iTunes, why don't you do it now? Don't forget to show us some love and go onto iTunes and leave a rating and a quick review. We appreciate that very much.
We always appreciate the love. And if you're a new fan, we want to tell you that you can also stay in touch with us all week via Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. On Twitter and Instagram, we're Pop Insiders. Facebook, it's Inside Pop Podcast. And head over to our official site, InsidePopPodcast.com.
So many ways to get in touch with us. Now let's get right into the show. Amita, another weekend, another record-setting superhero box office movie, correct?
Yes. Deadpool 2 came out this weekend. And it did not disappoint at the box office. It knocked out Avengers Infinity War from the number one spot. It racked up $125 million in the opening weekend, which is the second largest R-rated opening ever. It follows Deadpool, which was the first largest R-rated opening ever. And, you know, I don't think it fell that short. It was $8 million short from the original. But I think there might be an argument to say, well, usually a sequel is even more anticipated. And because Deadpool was so big and so crazy and so huge, maybe the sequel should have done better. What do you think about that?
I think the movie studio is very happy. I think it is a twofold argument. On one hand, it's an original, you know, the first movie is the original. It has the task of creating the world and bringing people in that world. And then, of course, the second one has more expectation and anticipation. I guess it comes down to, does everyone who saw the first movie plan to come back, plus all of the new people who discovered Deadpool via VOD and just word of mouth? So yeah, it's interesting. That would be an interesting conversation. One day we'll have to talk about sequels that both creatively surpassed their originals, but then also box office wise.
Definitely, definitely. I think creatively, this sequel did really well. Like, you know, if anybody watched the original Deadpool, it was really meta. You know, Ryan Reynolds was tailored for this role to really just poke fun at himself and poke fun at the character. And then the entire kind of Deadpool is part of X-Men, but not really right now because of where the X-Men films kind of landed. So that humor is always great and is always fun to see. So I welcomed seeing a lot of that sparsed throughout this film. And, you know, we have new characters, which are fun. I think the one thing that I thought was funny while me and my friend Amina was watching it, we were like, there was like this kid like a few seats down from us that was, I don't know, maybe 10 years old?
Judging.
Maybe?
I am judging the
parent.
We were
just both like, that kid's watching this movie? Like,
oh, yeah. Definitely. No, I'm judging that parent. Poor parenting skills.
Yeah.
Don't bring your 10-year-old to Deadpool 2. First of all, don't ruin my movie experience by bringing your way too young child to this R-rated film. Secondly, yeah, live. It's too much for the kid. I don't care how advanced your kid is.
I'll give the child well behaved points, but I just think that it's a really mature content for that age, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, that's why Deadpool stands out amongst all these other superhero movies and the ones that are really, 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 really good. I mean, I talk a lot about how amazing Logan the film is, and I think that is the only other R-rated superhero film that I can think of now. I think two very different films. Logan went very serious, very dramatic, very emotional. Deadpool, it's all about the snark and the meta humor, great action. I have not seen the sequel, full disclosure, but I do have some non-spoiler questions for you, Amita.
I have
questions about the film that that will not spoil it, but are of interest to me and will get me hopefully more excited to see it. Question number one, Josh Brolin, who I feel like is age appropriate to me. I think he's a little older. Oh, God, please let him be a little older. I heard Josh Brolin worked out hard to get in shape for the role of Cable.
Yes, he did.
Does that seem apparent?
You do not need to finish that sentence. Yes.
Okay, good. I love, there's so many things I love. I love when actors get in shape for roles. I mean, it's kind of vicarious because I wish that I got paid to get in shape because then maybe I'd get in shape. But, I love listening to the DVD commentary where they talk about, well, this is my training regimen and I only ate chicken and I had to eat six times a day and all that stuff. It's super vicarious for me.
Yes.
And especially when somebody's a little bit long in the tooth, like Hugh Jackman or Josh Brolin, I love to see that they're able to force their bodies to be something that the bodies don't really want to be.
Yes, Josh Brolin is age appropriate. I just looked up his age. He is your age.
Oh, go Josh Brolin, go. Add him to the list.
Next question from the audience, please.
Next question. This is teetering on spoiler, but do you get the sense? I've heard some criticism. So the only criticism I've heard of Deadpool 2 is that the movie prides itself in being different and smarter than and more self-aware than other superhero movies, but at the same time it swims in a lot of the same tropes. For example, it seemed like it was really setting itself up for yet another sequel or spinoff. How did you feel about that?
It's interesting how it's hard to answer this question without spoiling things.
Okay.
It's just interesting to hear you think that they set it up for something, because I didn't feel that way at the end of it.
Interesting. Okay. But I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but Amita, know that in comic books, no one ever really dies. The Phoenix, Jean Grey, she died about three or four times in five different dimensions.
Yeah.
She came back.
And listen, I will divulge something. Yes, it can be set up for something, or no, it cannot. I'm just going to give both answers here because I don't want to tread in really weird waters here. It's just interesting how they end it, and it leaves a lot of questions, which is great, which I like.
Okay, my last question is, I hear that it has one of the very, very, very best post-credit sequences of all time.
Yes.
Agree or disagree?
It does. If you didn't bring it up, I would have brought it up. And hell yeah. Just so you guys know, you don't have to wait till the very end of the credits for a post-credit scene. Like Avengers films have in the past, there's nothing. I was told there was like some type of song or something. That's not even there. There is nothing at the end of the credits, so you guys can save yourself 10 minutes. But watch them to really, you know, value all the people that worked on the show, on the movie. It's about, it's after, like, the first set of credits is like a really fun animated, you know, credits of all the major stars and players. And then there's a really awesome scene. It's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're really making me want to go this afternoon to see Deadpool 2.
You should.
So that's my last question. Do you recommend this film? I guess you do.
I do. You know, it's like, listen, if you love, you know, all of these superhero films and you follow them all, there are so many great meta jokes in here about all of them. And that makes it just so funny. And I felt like sometimes I was like laughing really hard at certain winks at, you know, like he goes in on, obviously he's known for going in on X-Men stuff, but he went in on some DC stuff and some Marvel stuff, and like some of that stuff made me laugh so hard, and that is always fun, and that's why it's always great to do these films, because they really keep you on your toes, you know.
Ooh, final question. Yeah. Sorry, I lied. This is my final question. A few weeks ago, I tried to convince you that Deadpool is actually a bisexual superhero.
Oh, goodness.
Is there any indication of that in this film?
Yes, there is, but I was wondering what, you know, when we were discussing it, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that. I just wonder how serious that action is. You know, I wonder if it's just being kind of cutesy and funny, and is it actually a feeling and an emotion that is where this character is going? That's where I fall on that.
Copy that. I want a sequel where it's all realized. Okay. Well, shall we segue to some big old music news of the week?
Yeah. So let's do it.
All right. Well, this past Sunday, the Billboard Music Awards were held. If I thought the Grammys annoyed me, I am here to tell you that Billboard Music Awards were even more annoying. But listen, I'm not here to hate. I am here to love and celebrate. And so let's focus in on a couple of the amazing things about the Billboard Music Awards. Okay, we all know this. Dear listeners, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while or just recently, you know how much Sean David Johnson and Amita Patel love Janet Jackson. I DVR'd that show. That's the only thing I watched. Oh, and then I discovered that Salt-N-Pepa and Vogue were performing, so I watched that too. But I could really have not cared less or more about anyone else. Let's talk about Janet Jackson. Amita, may we start with a spontaneous slay or nay Janet Jackson's red carpet look? Talk to me.
Oh my God, so much slay on that red carpet look. Oh, I love her so much.
Amazing. Like, I didn't expect her. It was like this fresh, like the summery, light, springy.
Yes.
She just glided down the red carpet.
I mean, she glides everywhere she goes. If you guys know her, like we know her, that's what she does. And that's just like because she's a consummate professional performer, and like she knows this, she knows this inside and out, you know, and so she knows how to work that carpet, she knows how to just have every look and move, and she knows how to bring it every time. She's effortless because she's a pro. That's what this.
Well, because she puts so much effort into it. I mean, she's the Jacksons are the hardest working family in show business. I mean, she makes it seem effortless, I guess.
Yes.
But I mean, it's all work and you know, and also to be fair to all the people who work with her, stylists,
oh, of course,
I want one, makeup artist, ditto, and you know, a whole team. But then it's up to her. It's up to her to pull it all off. But yeah, I loved the kind of flowy skirt and like the really kind of simple white top. A friend of mine sent me text. It was like, oh, bold move to go braless. Kudos to a 52-year-old woman who is up for doing that.
Didn't notice that part. Now
yeah.
I'm searching for photos.
And then I loved how I'm not usually that into fashion, but then I loved how the brown leather belt just added this like touch of masculinity, which I thought was cool. Loved it. Loved all of that. And then there was the performance. So I'm going to say that I love Janet. I will follow her till the ends of the earth. I thought the performance was good, but not kind of historic and memorable the way many of her other TV performances have been. And I think the way people were just kind of chomping at the bit and ready and waiting for it to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say I was definitely waiting for more and more and more and not really getting it. I think she's 52 and she can perform better than most and better than lots, actually. A lot of the ones that are actually on the show previous to her.
Don't name names, Amita. Don't name names.
You want me to name names. You need me to name names. Okay, I'm done.
No, let's keep it. High. Let's go high.
She, and we got to see her in November, and she kicks ass on stage. That's just a given. But she has so many hits, and I felt like she could have done one, that performance could have gone a little bit longer, and we could have had a few more of the bigger hits, just because she can and she does them so well. And so I was left wanting more. And that was yeah. frustrating, because I was like, this is a huge award. They had this huge package before it, celebrating all of these incredible, you know, highlights of her career and how important Control was and, you know, and Rhythm Nation was. And I was just like, okay, so where's more of that?
Yeah, I think that we have a friend who in my life is the consummate Janet Jackson expert and fan. And she actually said to me that she thought that Janet was afraid, I think she used the word fear, that afraid to dance all out. And I don't know if that was fear of not getting every single dance step right. I mean, she was on a tour. She hasn't toured for a few months. She's going back on tour this summer. So maybe she just felt like she only had enough rehearsal time to pull off that number of songs.
Maybe.
But I'm going to say I'm also going to criticize the direction of it. There were times where I know it's an award show and you've got to show how much the crowd is into it, so I'll know how much I'm into it. I feel like that's what a lot of literal directors do. But there were times like, okay, when Janet's in the middle of the If dance break, one of the most iconic pieces of pop choreography in the history of our lives, don't cut away to the audience. We need to see the full If dance break from start to finish, with like a head-to-toe shot of the dancers. You don't cut away to the audience. So I'm criticizing the direction. I feel like maybe the performance may have been better in person than it was on TV, because that crowd was lit up.
Yes. I think that the crowd definitely loved Janet and was there for Janet. But I do feel the same way. I feel like the direction could have been really... It didn't serve her as well as it could have to really feature her and these performances for all of these songs. I thought of you when I watched it, because I was just like, oh my God, she's doing Throb, which I know you love.
I love Throb. Norman, our friend Norman, loves Throb even more than I do, but Throb is, if you said, Sean, you can only dance to one song for the rest of your life, I would choose Throb.
Wow.
Yeah, it's such a good song.
It's such a good song.
I was happy. It was kind of random that she chose that, but I think it's like a good get-up song, and, you know, kind of get up and party.
Yeah, and I think that also speaks to maybe it's a song that she loves, and she loves to perform. And I like that she didn't, you know, try to do something. You know, she maybe did a little bit of the popular, but then a little bit of what she wanted too. That's how I feel she thought about that one.
And listen, first Black woman to receive the Billboard Icon Award. Shame on you, Billboard. Shame on you. Thank you for honoring Janet. And that's the only thing I'm going to thank you for. Next year, we better see another female, and then another, and another, and another, because women are pop music.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So I want to see, I don't know who, Aretha Franklin, Madonna, Whitney Houston posthumously. Give me a string of women, Amita.
I agree. You know, I thought that was crazy that she's the first Black female to win this. But at the same time, I'm glad she was the first in a way. And that was appropriate, considering how many hits she's had. And, you know, I think to go off what you're saying, like more females for sure. I think that was a really great theme throughout this award show. And I do agree with you. It wasn't really like a fabulous, amazing award show. It had some highs and lows. But the one thing that I do feel was a lot of the female strength that we saw in performances, in collaborations, you know, I'm gonna give my two cents of shade here. Like, I just didn't even care about or think that Taylor Swift had success with her last album, and somehow she won some awards, and I was like, really? People still care? That's interesting. But I had to remind myself that this award show is about charts, and it is based on the Billboard charts, the Hot 200, and the singles and the streams, and there are charts that you could honestly look them up and probably figure out who's going to win everything, because it's charted. And that's when you have to take it like a step back and just sit back and enjoy the show for what it is. And, you know, shout out to Kelly Clarkson. I think she did a great job as a first-time host of anything. She was fun and bubbly and cute, and she did an incredible medley at the very beginning, which was like she did a little bit of Kendrick Lamar and some Sam Smith and Maren Morris and Bruno Mars, and they did a really great medley, and she killed all of it. And, you know, there was a really nice soft spot in the award show that Kelly opened the show trying to be very somber about the Santa Fe High School shooting in Texas. And she was a Texas girl, and she, I guess they had discussed about maybe doing a moment of silence to start the show. And she was crying and saying, no, that's not doing anything. We need a moment of change. We need a moment of action. And that was really, really beautiful. And I completely agree. Like, I was saying, yes, Kelly, when she was saying that, because moments of silence are unfortunately not helping this issue. And then another really moving moment at the middle of the show when Khalid and Shawn Mendes sang a song called Youth that they were joined on stage with some of the show choir from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And I really enjoyed that performance and that song as well. It had a really wonderful message.
That's great. I mean, I think that award shows are rising to the occasion of not being able to ignore really impactful moments in social, political, in our social and political time. So I'm glad that they did that. And yeah, I think again, it's no time to just be entertainers. I think everyone has a responsibility. Every person has a responsibility to act to improve what in many ways is a nightmarish situation we're living in so many ways. School shooting after nuclear threat, after just a lot of stuff. You didn't come to this podcast to get brought down, so I won't continue on that. But I do thank you for telling me about that, because I'm glad that even the Billboard Music Awards rose to the occasion and brought some gravitas to the situation.
Yeah, it did. It's such an interesting thing, because now I live in a space where I know about Childish Gambino, This Is America, and now I think about these moments differently, right? Because yes, you took the time and you were somber, but then just 5 minutes later, you had a performance that was really exciting and entertaining. And I think of like Donald Glover in that video and that whole group of dancers and all of this unrest behind him. It's so interesting how impactful that video was, and makes you think of a little bit of the dance that's put in front of you to hide what's really happening, you know. And it's hard. It's a hard balance for anybody to try to go through. So but it was interesting thinking of that after that This Is America video.
Yeah, perhaps there would be an interesting panel discussion where people could talk about, if you have a podcast, for example, that does focus on something light and fun, like entertainment or cooking or fashion, what do you do when there are really amazing, you know, hard things happening in the world? How do you balance that? If only there were a panel that tackled that issue coming up this summer.
I wonder what you might be alluding to, Sean. Are you talking about our panel at this year's Podcast Movement by chance?
That is correct. Spontaneous promo. Amit and I will be at the Podcast Movement PM18 this July in Philadelphia, and we are going to be leading a kind of a fireside chat on this topic, you know, that I just described. So listen, Amita, now more than ever, I feel like we've got our work cut out for us to really try to put together what can be a great conversation to talk about. You know, and I think what we talk about in terms of podcasters just goes into everyday life as well, right? Like, how do you live your life, especially like us here in America and other first world countries, you know, living our super cushy lives. Even if you're lower middle class, even if you're poor, your life is somewhat cushy compared to so much else out of the world. Let me get off the soapbox, but say that we are excited to kind of talk about, and we always are, how, yes, we know pop culture is entertainment, but there can actually, if it's done right, be some meaningfulness in it as well. So we're working on that. coming, come to Podcast Movement and see us and meet us. We'll be excited for the support.
Yes, yes. We're really, really excited about this and excited to be able to participate in a different way at this wonderful podcaster conference. All right. I need a minute. Maybe we should take a short message and come back to discuss our experience at the Vulture Festival.
The Dead Pilot Society podcast brings you hilarious comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Aubrey Plaza, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, John Hodgman, Adam Scott, Molly Shannon, Busy Phillips, Tom Lennon, Anna Camp, Laurie Metcalf, Felicia Day, Michael Ian Black, Adam Savage, Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz, Skylar Astin, Mae Whitman, Josh Molina, Ben Feldman, Nicole Byer, Jason Ritter, Sarah Chalk, Steve Agee, Jane Levy, Allison Tolman, Danielle Nicolette, Casey Wilson, Anna Ortiz, Lorraine Newman, June Diane Raphael, Kiernan Shipka, Ed Week, Zach Knight, and Carrie Kenny Silver, John Ross Bowie, Jamie Denbo, Janet Varney, Alexander Forsyth, Summer, Ellen Morales, Matt Worley, and many more. Listen at MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Inside Pop.
So this past weekend, I would like to say that I had a pop culture checklist type of weekend. I ended up seeing Deadpool 2, of course, and the Billboard Awards, which we've already discussed. But most of my weekend actually was spent at Vulture Festival. And the Vulture Festival is a really fun 2-day event in New York City at Milk Studios, which is a really cool space down in Chelsea, where they bring together these really great panels of stars from really popular shows and podcasts. And it's all brought together by New York Magazine's pop culture site, Vulture, which we both love. And, you know, and we were super excited to be able to get access to a few events, and happy to share all of it with you, because I just felt like I had so much pop culture fun this weekend because of it.
Yeah, it's a great event. And if you're a pop culture fan, but weren't able to make it to New York, we're going to give you some highlights to just give you a little bit of that awesome, awesome experience. So I guess first up, Amita and I attended the RuPaul Drag Race panel discussion. And so it was a number of queens, both past and present, and Michelle Visage were on stage, and they discussed the show and answered questions and kind of showed their charisma with each other. There was some light shade throwing, which of course the audience ate up, and they were really good about not giving spoilers. I'll say that much.
Yeah, they were. I mean, I think the only person who could really spoil anything was Michelle Visage. You know, they had the very first winner, BB, on there, and then Jinx Monsoon, who won a later season, and then two of the queens that had already left this current season. So I don't know how much they actually know about who might be winning this year. So I'm excited to continue to watch this season. But I really enjoyed the conversation about how the show continues to grow in its audience and how much it's become this voice of being yourself and this voice to an entire, you know, country to really embrace who you are and to really find your artistry in whatever way and shape you want to. And I felt like all of the queens were really beautiful and really, really earnest about that fact and how it's changed their lives and how they feel they can, you know, be an example for other young LGBTQ youth, but also for youth across the, you know, every single, you know, any category possible, you know, straight, gay, like bisexual, trans, anything. And then also, you know, how creative these guys are. Like, they're incredibly creative. And they talked a little bit about, you know, how they're only starting to get awards recognition. You know, RuPaul won the Emmy for Best Host last year. And it was really interesting when they were just like, we've been around, though. It's just that only recently people are taking notice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that they were on Logo. Logo is a network, a gay network, and it's on in fewer homes than VH1. And I think a lot of people just didn't try to find it or didn't have it. And I think, but it's such an amazing show that it kept growing in popularity despite being on a smaller network, and now being on VH1, which just puts itself in front of a larger audience, a more diverse audience. And I think at the same time, the quality of the show has sustained and improved. So it's kind of the perfect mixture for a show to explode. So my prediction is, I think it is going to get an Emmy nomination again this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if it won. I would not be surprised if it wins this year. I mean, it's just, it's kind of a critic's darling. It's fun. The writing and production are so good. And it would just be a breath of fresh air for the Emmys. I am a new member of the TV Academy, I'm proud to say. And I mean, I'll have to look at what the other nominees would be, but I could see myself voting for RuPaul's Drag Race.
Ooh.
Perhaps, yeah.
Please do.
Yeah. What else did you enjoy at the Vulture Fest, Amita?
I got to see really cool, like I'm a fan of the TV Land show Younger. And they actually gave us a sneak peek at the season 5 premiere, which is shocking. If anybody watches the show, that premiere will shock you all. So definitely tune in for that. I think that's on June 5th that it's coming out. But it was really, I felt super special to be able to watch a sneak preview of that. And then the cast was so wonderful. And, you know, I think the show is taking what's happening with Me Too and infusing that into their show. And it seems actually pretty seamless because some of the storylines that may have touched upon that in the past have now been enhanced by it now. And I think that's really smart. And I think that's where the show is always kind of on the pulse and does some really cool things like that. So I'm excited to see the next season. And it was really great to see that entire cast. I think the other panel that I got to see, which I was really excited to see, was Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye. He has a podcast as well. And it's called Getting Curious. And so on his show, he brings on different guests to discuss whatever he wants to discuss. And he brought a guest on. And that was his, you know, he was doing Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness at Vulture Festival. And he was like, I just brought up a friend of mine and he's so sweet and he's a really famous actor. And here's Justin Theroux. And the whole crowd went crazy. We were like, what?
And random.
And they talked about how much they admired each other. And it was very sweet. Jonathan Van Ness is a really incredibly just this light of a person that as soon as you start to, you know, listen to him and get to know him, you know, you just can't but love him because he's just got all this energy, but he's got this really great authenticity to him as well. And he projects such positivity and goodness, and it just is infectious. Like even just, you know, a small thing that he did at the very beginning of the conversation, he just made us all breathe. You know, he's like, close your eyes and put your hands down on your knees if you want to be grounded, or up, palm face up if you want to be open, and let's breathe and sigh it out. And it was just like a beautiful way to start this conversation and to really get an idea of who he is and how he wants everybody to be comfortable. And then we had this really interesting conversation. It went all over the place, but it was really funny. He talked about After Hours, the Martin Scorsese film. And then Justin Theroux talked about how much he loved that film and then how he was also in China for part of his life. And then, you know, Jonathan talked about, basically recited the whole plot for While You Were Sleeping. Like there was so much randomness in the entire conversation, but somehow it worked and it was really entertaining. And two of the other Queer Eye members, Tan France and Anthony Porowski, also came and the crowd went wild for them. And he brought them on the stage at the end. It was such a love fest. They loved Jonathan so much for all of his, you know, support and energy throughout the season. And then he, you know, loved them as well. The audience had some questions. This one girl broke down crying, just saying thank you for bringing some positivity into the landscape. And then everybody cried. Everybody on stage cried. Everybody in the room cried. It was a very cathartic experience, but it was really, really sweet. And I got a chance to meet both Jonathan and Tan afterwards and thank them for everything. They're really, really sweet guys. So that was really fun.
That sounds like a great That sounds like a great, great panel. Many emotions going on in that panel. Laughter, tears.
Yeah.
That sounds really great. That sounds fun. And then we were saving the best for last, or I don't know if it was saying the best, but one of the dear, dear, dear shows of Inside Pop, Ava DuVernay and the cast of Queen Sugar. I kind of sort of closed out the festival. They were one of the last seminars Sunday night, and you saw that. How was that experience?
I mean, anytime Ava enters a room, you just feel like you can do anything and that you are elevated along with her. And that is exactly how we all felt being in that room with her. It was wonderful to have them really dive in and discuss the series and really give some insight into like the thought process of their characters. They showed this scene at the end of season two where Ralph Angel tells his family that Blue isn't his. And Ava DuVernay was on the stage with Kofi Cirabo, Rutina Wesley, and Donnelly and Gardner, and they were all on stage. They watched the clip, and no joke, they were all in tears. And they shot that, and they, you know, obviously have lived that already, and it's and a bunch of us were in tears too. It was it's something about the show and the way that they do the show and the way that they really craft these characters and these moments. It's still powerful, even though you know it's coming and you've seen it already. And such a testament to the thought that goes into all of this. What's interesting that Ava said about that is that from the beginning of the series, she knew that was going to be a plot line. That was coming, which I thought was very interesting. And the cast didn't know it. Only Ralph Angel knew at the beginning of shooting season two, but the cast didn't know that was happening until right before they shot that. So I thought that was really interesting.
I saw the cast of the three siblings at the Tribeca TV Talks last fall, and the actor who plays Ralph Angel, he actually said that he doesn't watch the show, that he, at least at that time, he said that he's so new to this experience. I mean, he's been acting for a while, but so new to starring on a TV show that he kind of wants to stay grounded and stay focused on his craft. So at least then, he actually doesn't watch full episodes. You know, he reads his scripts and talks to the other actors and the directors, but he doesn't go back and look at the episodes that aired. So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think an interesting thing is Ava talked a little bit about the process of living in the storyline a little bit longer. You know, she says one of her biggest pet peeves in TV is sometimes they'll like introduce something, and then in a couple episodes later, it's kind of just like that happened and nobody discusses it anymore. And she's like, I really wanted to make a conscious choice to make sure we don't let storylines just fall to the wayside and that we really make sure that we still continue them. And I thought that was also just another really conscious decision, which shows you just how brilliant Ava is and how she's really trying to change, you know, an approach to scripted television.
Well, she's amazing because I follow her on Instagram. And
yes,
if there are any movie fans out there, you know that she was on the jury for the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah.
So she was in Cannes probably the day before you saw her on Sunday.
Was.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. So she, I mean, it reminds me of, was it a couple of years ago when we saw a screening of 13th, her amazing documentary about mass incarceration. And the next day I looked at her Instagram and she was in the woods of the Pacific Northwest filming or scouting for A Wrinkle in Time. So listen, if you want to be successful, you stay on the grind like Ava DuVernay, right?
I am inspired every single time. Like, she inspires my grind every single time I see her in an event like this or in just on her Instagram or her Twitter account. It's unbelievable. I don't think the woman sleeps very much with all that she's doing. But for some reason, the lack of sleep works because she is truly excelling on every level. And I really can't say that more solidly. Like, she really is. And I have such admiration and respect for her. And I literally just squad goals, boss goals, all these goals when I think of Ava.
Well, we should segue and promote next week's episode because we are excited and honored to have the new producing director of Queen Sugar on our show next week. We are going to talk to Demaine Davis. Last year, we spoke with Kat Candler, who is now the showrunner of Queen Sugar. So we're going to talk to her about the premiere episode, what we might expect in terms of other directors for the show, upcoming themes. Don't know how many plot points we'll get out of her, but we'll try. And so that's all coming up next week on Inside Pop. So stay tuned because we're just going to have a short message. And then when we return, it's the big sell.
I feel like I need to sing the theme song again.
I can't say the big sell without sounding like Ed McMahon.
Hey, we'd like to talk to you about our new podcast on Maximum Fun, Friendly Fire.
It's the podcast about action movies and Sylvester Stallone specifically. It's the show I've always wanted to make.
It is not that. It is not that at all.
It's a little bit more of a war movie podcast.
It's not a little bit more of a war movie podcast. It is explicitly a war movie podcast. We look at them from all sides and put them in a variety of cultural and historical contexts such that anyone is going to enjoy this show.
So go grab Friendly Fire every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for the big sell. Pause for the music. It's the segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something that we love from the world of pop culture to the other. The next week, we come back and share our rating. 5 stars for You're Perfect. The pick was perfect. I love it. 1 star for This is the Worst Piece of Poop I have ever seen, heard, experienced.
Which we never give. We haven't gotten that low.
No. I mean, listen, I've thought about trying to give you a 1-star big sell to secretly just to see what you do. Like I tried to think, oh, look, what if I give something really, really, really awful? Let's do an experiment. But you know what? I don't want to do that because I feel like we're also big selling the listeners and I don't want to waste their time with something intentionally bad. But I'm every once in a while I feel mischievous and I feel like I want to give you something that I know you'll hate just to see what your reaction is. But I'll refrain from doing that. I'll stay mature within the world of the big sell.
Please do.
I'll try.
Let's try.
All right. Well, yes. So especially when you give me great big sells like last week.
Oh, yay!
Last week, Amita big sold Madison McFerrin. The last name may sound familiar because she's the daughter of the singer Bobby McFerrin. And so, Amita, you big sold the song Insane, which I listened to on Spotify. And it's great. As you said, like her dad, she accompanies herself and provides percussion and harmonies with her own voice, with her own mouth. And it's great. It's beautiful, beautiful voice, beautiful harmonies. And I really enjoyed the song. And I did wonder and think, oh, does she do this throughout the entire album? Or does she, like, I wonder if she's ever backed by real instruments.
I don't think so. From what I've read about her, she's not.
Okay.
I think that's
her thing. And it's interesting because sometimes kids don't want to do exactly what their parents did, but for fear of being judged and wanting to step out on their own. So I'm going to assume that she just really respects her father and loves the music he creates and continued in a very similar vein. So that's awesome. But yes, I love the song Insane by Madison McFerrin, and I'm going to give it 3.25 stars.
Oh, thanks. I am so happy that you enjoyed her. I hope you discover a little bit more. She has 2 EPs out there, so hopefully you can listen to some more of her music. And, you know, maybe we'll see her somewhere. Maybe she'll do some small venues or something in New York, and we'll be able to enjoy her live, because I think that would be a really fun experience as well.
Ooh, would love to see her live. Bet.
Yeah. All All right, well, what do you have to sell to me this week, Don?
I used to say that all the time when I was a kid.
I don't think I've ever heard you say it. Bet. All right.
I am really excited about what I have to big sell to you. I don't know if I've big sold music to you lately, but I do have a music to big sell to you this week. Came across this song, surprise, surprise, on my release radar on Spotify. Have you heard of the singer Angelique Kidjo?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, a multi-Grammy award-winning African singer, and she has released a new song, which I saw her name, and I was like, oh, I love her, but I don't know that much about her. Why is she in my release radar? She has recorded a cover of the Talking Heads song Once in a Lifetime.
Oh.
Amita Patel and all you listeners, it's an amazing song. Okay, but it gets more interesting than this. So I did some research so I could give you an informed big sell. She not only did a cover of Once in a Lifetime, she has done a track-by-track cover of the entire Remain in Light Talking Heads album from 1980.
Wow.
So basically, long story short, when the Talking Heads recorded Remain in Light in 1980, they, you know, admitted, they're like, we wanted to change up our sound. David Byrne had a little bit of writer's block. And so they really embraced sounds and music and harmonies and instrumentation from Africa. So this new wave band from New York really embraced African music to create one of the best rock pop albums of the 80s. So Angelique Kidjo has said, I want to kind of pay homage to that homage. So now I am going to take this rock album that was influenced by Africa and give you my African versions of these songs. So there will be an entire cover album, but for now we only have the single and I love it.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And I love the kind of just like flip and reverse it situation of that.
Yeah.
Cool. I can't wait to listen.
And then I'll just say my favorite thing about the song is it taught me that for the past 30 years, I've been singing the wrong lyric. And we'll talk about that next week. There's a lyric, and the way David Byrne sang it, I thought he was saying something. And I was like, oh, that's poetic, and I get why he's singing that line. I've sang it for 30 years that way. In this version, I was like, oh, shoot, he wasn't saying that. He was saying this, and that's even a better lyric. So we'll talk about what that lyric is in next week's show when you return for your rating of Angelique Kidjo's cover of Once in a Lifetime by Talking Heads.
I can't wait to listen to this. Thank you so much for that big sell. And thank you to all of you. That is it for us this week. Please, as we said before, stay in touch with us. Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. Facebook, Inside Pop Podcast. Head over to InsidePopPodcast.com. Subscribe. Rate, review. Listen to old episodes. Stay in touch. That's all we ask.
And you can also find us on MaxFun.org. We are there alongside a number of other podcasts, all dedicated to comedy and culture. As we said, next week is a big episode for Inside Pop.
Yes, we are going to be featuring our interview with Demaine Davis from Queen Sugar, and we will be talking about the premiere episode of Queen Sugar Season 3. Can't wait to share that with you guys. And of course, there's a little movie called Solo coming out this weekend. Maybe we'll discuss it. We'll see.
A little movie. Until then, have a great week, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.